Hey, it's Ash. Today's episode of Eat, Talk, Repeat is sponsored by Sam and Ash Injury Law. If you've been injured in a crash, call Sam and Ash, 702-820-1234, or visit samandashlaw.com. Sam and Ash, because you deserve what's right.
Guess who's back?
In studio.
Yeah.
Are we recording?
Yeah, I've got everything here.
Are you sure?
Famous last words.
I am sure.
We got the band back together again.
Isn't this wonderful?
I'm not 2,000 miles away. You're not 7,000 miles away.
Five.
Five?
Five and change.
Five and change? Okay. Yeah. If I was two, you were five. We were along.
And I was just holding down the fort, guys.
I know, you were.
Little old Ashley.
Hanging out.
Young. Little young Ashley, please. Thank you.
My man Sam, traveling fool all the way to Prague and back in 1 week. That's impressive.
My body is still trying to figure out what time it is.
I know.
Did your wiener just jump up on your lap?
Yeah, Rocky wanted to be part of the show.
Rocky the wiener dog is officially part of the show.
He eats, he talks, and repeats, and that's what this show is all about. So
I don't want to be there when he's repeating, okay?
So happy Friday. Welcome to another episode of Eat, Talk, Repeat with me, Ash Watkins. We've got John Curtis. What's your lovely nickname for this show?
What's your nom de guerre today?
Yeah, what are we going with?
I've got a good one for you.
Finally.
This one will send a Sam to the dictionary. Okay. The Iracundulous Sybarite.
It doesn't even rhyme.
Iracundulous Sybarite.
I had one of those, I think, but the doctor removed it.
No, that was a carbuncle. that was a bubonic plague carbuncle.
What does it say it again?
Iracundulous. Iracundulous. It's an old.
And then what's the other word?
Sybarite. Sybarites just mean a Dionysian lover of life. To be a Sybarite, you are pretty much a person who lives for pleasure, which I think pretty much defines.
Yeah, that sums you up.
And iracundulous is just a synonym for being irascible, irritable, cantankerous, etc. It's an old British term. I looked it up. Yes, I'd love to say I pulled it right out of my own personal vocabulary, but I had to look
it
up.
I was going to ask. I'm like, do you go to the thesaurus, or how does this work?
Not often, but I did for this one.
Okay. Well, we've got, say it again, John.
The iracundulous Sybarite.
Mm-hmm. Curtis. Okay. Welcome to the show, John. I will never remember that one. And then we've got Sam Rajofsky, our resident crudo king.
Our,
is that it?
Our fearless leader.
At your service. And look at you.
I know. I feel great. I'm not having to do the wizardry of the board this week.
Sam, she stresses out when you're not here.
I don't fail.
And you don't. She does not fail, but you can tell she's a. It's like she's flying a helicopter. Yeah. You know, she's rubbing her stomach and patting her head at the same time, and trying to be witty and erudite, which you generally you succeed at.
Thank you. Okay. This should be a fun show. It'll be quick. It'll be interesting. I think we've got some...
lots of things to talk about. You guys are going to have to carry me a little bit because I was in D.C. last year.
Last week. I don't get paid enough for this.
I don't have my usual litany of four or five restaurants to go through today because I was gone for like a week and I was like bogged down with business in D.C. and I got back. I went to Yen Viet Kitchen, which is my favorite little Vietnamese in Chinatown, a little bit off Spring Mountain Road, but that's pretty much it for me. But we have lots of issues, as the English would say, issues.
Before we get to reservations, I know we want to get into that. I want to ask you, John, TikTok is up for getting banned. What is this going to do to all the food reviewers? What is food without TikTok anymore?
Poor Vegas Starfish, poor Keith Lee. What are they going to do with their takes on, oh, man, I'm eating this taco and I give it an 8.4. Oh, yeah, it's great taco. Come on. Who gives a fuck? I mean, I'm sorry. I love all the teeth gnashing over the creators. And what are the creators going to do? TikTok's just a network. You're putting free shit up, and shit is the appropriate term. And so it gets taken away. Go somewhere else. Who gives a crap?
Yeah, I think that's the better take. Go somewhere else. I think if TikTok gets banned, a new app, or everyone will just go back to Instagram, and they will use Reels or Facebook or YouTube. It'll just move. All these influencers, they'll take their followers somewhere else. And because you saw a lot of like political people who were getting their videos yanked from YouTube and other platforms, they went elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I think.
I'm actually on TikTok, which I think is kind of humorous.
You are?
I've got 2,600 followers.
Oh, okay.
Every so often, I'll just throw some goddamn video up there. The thing about TikTok is, it's both obsessive, it's both addictive and exhausting at the same time, and ridiculous. So addictive, exhausting, and ridiculous at the same time, because you watch it and you go into these rabbit holes of watching videos. It could be whatever.
It's called doom scrolling.
Yeah, doom scrolling. I mean, you could be watching a political or something about space time. You could watch about vacuum cleaners, you know, golf swings, bowling videos.
But it also sort of exaggerates whatever theme it is that it's following. And in food, I don't know if I want a theatrical production. I want a sober assessment of what's there.
Well, that's a really good take right there.
Because all TikTok is cheese pulls, yolk porn, like all the random visuals.
And you know what mukbang is? Mukbang?
Oh, that's weird. That is the fucking weirdest thing.
You know, you get some...
I don't know what this is.
Some hot Asian chick, generally with big hooters, okay, with a giant plate of food eating it. And I mean... I don't know what it is, but the Asians go nuts for this. I mean, like, you know, 9 million followers, 100,000 likes. I mean, it's just
feeding fetish.
It's weird, and I think it kind of like picked up during COVID where people were eating at home, and so there's YouTube videos and TikTok all over where I think it's like, what is it, like mukbang?
Mukbang.
And people watch other people
eat.
It's so weird.
Well, not just not fat middle-aged guys like, I don't know, the guy sitting right at this microphone.
Yeah, no one's watching you.
Yeah, no one's watching. No one's watching me stuff my pie hole. But yeah, they're always hot little Asian chicks with the giant amount of food, and it's just the
Sam's
it's
looking
dumb.
It up as we.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, I will admit to people who like TikTok, there are worthwhile things on TikTok. I mean, I've seen some historical videos that are great. You know, whatever your history is, whether it's the history of astronomy or the history of World War I or the history of Czechoslovakia. Mm. I mean, you can
a lot there on the Uyghurs of China on the Cultural Revolution, but hey.
Yeah, but I'm just saying there is worthwhile stuff there, but it'll migrate somewhere else, and who gives a shit, basically.
Yeah, who gives a shit about TikTok? Let's get into some real stuff.
Okay, yeah.
So reservations.
We have issues to decide today.
Issues.
This is an issue I would want to talk about, yes, I would. Reservations. Okay, Sam. Let's go through this. The New Yorker had an article, a long-ass article, about people who buy and sell. And God damn it, I hate to give credit where credit is due, but Sam Mirajovsky called this goddamn. We started talking about this in one of our earliest episodes about the buying and selling of reservations.
Yep.
And Sam was knows one of the people, Jonas Fry, who's been behind this. And now it's a huge thing in restaurant demand cities like New York and Los Angeles.
What is it?
It's this thing. It's called, what's the name of it, Sam? It's called
AppointmentTrader.com.
AppointmentTrader.com, where people will go, like, let's say the three of us are in a convention and we come here and we go, oh man, I gotta go to Carbone. I heard Carbone is great. We gotta get a reservation there. And then you try to get it on Resy or Open Table. Oh, book. You call the line for the restaurant. It either doesn't answer it. It puts you on hold for like 45 minutes. So you go to this appointmenttable.com, and there's people there who do nothing but scroll the internet for in-demand reservations and book a bunch of reservations and then sell it to you. Say, oh, you want to go Thursday night at 8 o'clock? Well, my opening bid for that is $80. Okay. And if you bid 80 and he waits for a while and nobody bids 80, you get it. Or maybe you pay $130 or $60. And this has become a thing. And it's a really big thing in New York City. And I think it's kind of a thing a lot of places where they're buying and selling reservations. I went to the website. I think it's absurd, but if this FOMO herd mentality, everybody has to go to the places, has taken hold. And Ashley, this dovetails with what we talked about last week with people coming to me. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, a guy calls me up and goes, John, you know, I know you're connected in town, and my son's coming in from Chicago, and he's like 26-year-old, and he's got to go to Golden Steer. Man, can you get him into Golden Steer? Well, because he heard on Golden Steer, it's the place he's got to go. And I'm like, nothing against Golden Steer. Love Golden Steer. I mean, but honestly, in terms of steaks, houses, it's probably a dozen better steakhouses in Las Vegas. You know, Bavette's is in demand, too. Some of these places are just so packed with reservations, all from this internet ecosystem that's been created, especially over the last 5 years, that now people are buying and selling them. I think it's absurd. What do you guys think?
I think I've got a lot of layers of thoughts on this. First and foremost, I think I don't like if people are just like trawling the internet to scoop up these reservations.
But that's what they're doing.
No, I know, and it's natural, and I get it, and I think the app or the website will figure it out and kind of eliminate that. But look, if I book a reservation and I take the time to figure it out, high quality restaurant that everyone wants, and I find a way to get it and plan ahead, and then for whatever reason life hits me and I can't go, well, yeah, I would like to maybe get something for all the energy and effort that I took to book that reservation. So I think on like a one-off, it's great.
But it's not a one-off. It's become a cottage industry.
Well, no. But here's what I think you're saying. I think you're saying what my argument for why the site is a valuable service and why you can't just, you know, kind of dismiss it is that if you are if you live in New York, well, then you're building a relationship with the managers and the waiters and whatnot. You've got numbers, you've got people you can reach, and you're a regular, you're tipping, you're doing all that stuff, and you can get into these restaurants. But if you're going on an anniversary trip and it's a one-off thing, or you end up in New York and on Saturday night, you know, 7 o'clock, you want to go to Carbone and you can't get in, well, then your choices are not getting in or paying for the reservation through the service. And, you know, it's the marketplace figuring out there's demand and there's a supply issue, and it's driving up the price. These reservations have become, to your point, John, commodities.
Yeah.
And they're getting now – this is the first
– Well, two things. They've become fetishized
and
commodified. That's what they've done. So, yeah, same thing. Because now it's a fetish. It's like, oh, no, I'm in New York. I got to go to La Bernardin. We got to go to La Bernardin. Can you get me in La Bernardin?
Yeah. Well, that's the foodie culture. I think that's less about just strictly reservations. I think
but
FOMO.
But they've fed off each other now in the last 5 years.
Sure. I anticipate, pun intended. I actually anticipate restaurants maybe going back and totally reverting to in-person name, phone number. And if you don't show up, and it's not you on the check or the credit card that's paying, they're not going to seat you.
Well, I'm going to push back on that because given the fact that, of course, Jonas is a dear friend, and I have some insight to this. So without revealing too much about this, it's funny to see it now talked about nationally in the press. Believe it or not, restaurants are seeing an opportunity here and are beginning to partner with appointment trader, are actually themselves selling the reservations in some cases.
Well, it's just total bullshit to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This is old-ass, silver-haired boomer talking. I mean, I'm sorry, guys. Get over yourselves. I mean, it all comes from the ease. It's a deal with the devil that restaurants made with the internet when they bought into this Resi and Open Table shit where, oh, people can just press for, we can just, and I know people, we can just press buttons and, oh my God, look at me, I can reserve five restaurants.
I know, but I kind of like it, John.
No, bullshit.
No, but I mean,
what do you, do you like about
because,
it?
Because
that,
you can
that I don't have to call.
All right, you know.
But you just said you have to because you're someone, like you've, for the restaurants that matter, on a last-minute reservation, you do have to pull strings. You do have to already have the existing relationship.
Well, I like to text. I know I'm not alone in this. I know
texting's fine, but that's still like a modern version of calling the restaurant.
I'm pushing buttons.
Yeah,
you're
doing it such an impersonal way, and that you can literally hoard tables. And you know who pays for this in the end? It's the restaurants, because if you read that New Yorker article, and I read it's a long ass article, but it's good. I mean, it talks about the restaurants pay for this, because these restaurant hoarders, who again saw the free market. Sam's right as far as philosophically framing this as a supply and demand thing. But if you see this, okay, I'm a restaurant. I sit around, and some of these guys apparently are like 20-year-olds who sit there watching a basketball game and booking like 15 restaurants in like 1 hour.
Yes.
And then trying to sell them. And it's like, you know who pays when those people don't show up? Because it was so easy to make the reservation. Unlike the old days, you know, when I said, hey, Mr. Mirjowski, I want to come to your Slovakian restaurant. Can I get a table a Wednesday at 7 o'clock? Okay, Czech restaurant. And then you would say, oh, yes, sir, we have an opening then at 6:30. Can you come? Thank you. Done. We have made a connection. Now it's all impersonal. It's all, sorry, silver hair boomer alert, millennial bullshit. Ease. It's the same thing that fuels the DoorDash fraud that goes on here. It's
don't
just,
point at
we
me.
All, I'm looking right at you, Ashley Watkins. It's just, let's just sit on our fucking asses and do whatever convenient as possible. And I don't care if it hurts other people. We're just doing it. Now we figured out a way to make a little money off it. And I'm sorry, it's just bullshit.
I think the concept of food, restaurants, dining out, it's a very intimate thing. You're trusting someone else to feed you at its core. And so I ultimately anticipate restaurants. I think some restaurants will try and sell it and make sure that if anyone's making money off these reservations, it's them. I worry that they're going to get blowback in the press and the public eye from this. They're going to be seen as a sellout. And as a result, when I go out to eat, part of it, we've talked about this, part of it is the hospitality, the way we're treated. And if it's
big part of it.
And so if it all becomes this transactional thing, then it's basically prostitution.
Yeah.
You're paying to play.
I like the fact that I buy a reservation from you for Delilah for $80 for tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and then I walk in and I go, and what's the name? Well, the name is Beverly Williams. What the F? I'm sorry, guys. I mean, you have destroyed that intimacy, that hospitality connection. I swear, you know, Paul Bocuse and Sergio Macchione are rolling over in their graves at this show.
But look, if Open Table and Resy want to buy Appointment Trader and everyone wants to openly get in bed about it and figure it out, all for it. Look, yeah. It's the market. I support it, but I probably won't use it.
Yeah, my other thing about it is, and they actually say this, about three-quarters of the way down in the New York article, there's one paragraph that says, you know, on any given night, you know, the people who want to go to Carbone or some La Bernardine, there are literally 100 other great restaurants in New York where you could call them up or walk in and have a perfectly great meal. So this is all that, again, that FOMO herd mentality that just puts off people like me that just like things to be a little more personal.
I also think like Carbone, sure, fine. You can sell your reservations. I don't care.
It's for just that bullshit food?
Yeah, Jesus. But I mean, the person that's buying it deserves it. Like,
it is kind of a fair fight.
It's like a label fucking thing. Like, you know, if you're doing it, go for it. But for like the small, like boutique Michelin starred artistry restaurants, I think they will never cater to this.
I need to ask the boomer something. What restaurant are you aware of that only accepts call-in reservations? Because I have one in my mind, and it's not here in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm trying to
think. I know one.
Almost all of them do the open table thing at this point.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
do you know which one I'm thinking of?
Open table, yeah.
I'm thinking of Totoraku in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay, but that's not a speakeasy restaurant.
I can name 100 little Asian restaurants. There's about a dozen in
Spring Chinatown. Mountain Road, really.
They don't even have Facebook pages. Yeah. You know,
they don't even have a business license.
But they will tell you the Yelp wait time is an hour and 45 minutes.
But you know our French restaurant on Balboa Island in Newport Beach, they will not, there's no website, there's no, you have to call in and you're going to talk to the owner and you're going to get a table and it is packed. It is impossible to get a reservation. Swiss French restaurant. Remind me of the name.
Basilique.
Basilique, yeah. Well, but that's an anomaly in today's world, John.
It is. Well, also in this article, which I'm glad you sent me, Sam. It just came out, I think, 2 days ago.
And by the way, can I plug the article real fast? It's New Yorker.
Yeah.
And it is, let's see.
Why you can't get a restaurant reservation.
Right.
Yeah. That's it, yes.
And then, I read it free. I know you usually have a subscription on that, but I think if you don't go to their website
Clear your cookies.
Yeah, clear your cookies. you can read it for free. But it also talked about how something that you and I have talked about, and Ash talked about this, how do you get around this? You know, yeah, if you're this type of lazy ass that just wants to, like, get a reservation on your phone, call the restaurant sometimes,
yep.
and this is easier in some towns than others, show up.
Yeah.
Just show up. You know,
if you're a local,
the front door,
show up.
And go, you know, hey, do you have a seat? I was telling you guys before we started I remember going to a fancy place in New York once, and I just cruised by there at 5 o'clock, and they said, well, you know, we're kind of full. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I said, yeah, well, you know, we're flexible. We'll eat at the bar, blah, blah, blah. And the guy said, well, you, no, actually, this was in Washington, D.C., and I said, well, we're really flexible. The lady was really nice. We complimented how much we wanted to eat there. Mm-hmm. She said, well, if you could just come back, call me back in 30 minutes. I said, we're going to walk around Lafayette Park in New York City,
yeah.
In Washington, D.C. And we did. We came back. We've got a table for you, Serge. If you just 10 minutes, we'll get you a table. Great. That kind of personal stuff, you can even do it in town here at places like Delilah, Carbone, you know, Cipriani.
Golden Steer.
It will not work all the time, but it's better than just sitting on your phone trying to.
You didn't think about buying a reservation when you were there?
Well,
jumping on appointmenttrader.com?
Well, you know, it's good to be king in Las Vegas. Homie don't have to do that.
Oh, well, you're going to do this?
I'm going to pull that one. Okay.
Every show has this. The obligatory, homie don't do that.
Okay. I said
it must be so nice to be John Curtis
in Vegas. Okay, but I play by everybody else's rules when I'm out of town. So yeah, that's what I did in Washington D.C. and it worked out. So it can work out for you. But yeah, you got to get off your ass.
So you have to get off your ass. You got to be well dressed. You've got to be presentable, polite,
right.
And you've got to.
Can I just say, sometimes it doesn't hurt to slip a little bit of money.
Well, I mean,
if you need to. Yeah, no,
you know,
I'm kidding.
If you got the
well,
coin.
Well, I'm not Ash. I don't unbutton. You know, I just unbutton the top button.
You know, I've tried that. Yeah, well, yeah. You know, because people are dying to look at my cleavage. Okay. Yeah.
That's what keeps this show running, John,
It's your sex appeal.
But yeah, money's good. But Sam, that's my dad taught me this decades ago. That's a fraught kind of thing. You gotta know the room, read the room there.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get away with it. Sometimes they don't know how to react.
Sometimes it might be insulting.
It could be insulting.
Yeah.
You just have to know who you're dealing with there.
Never met anybody insulted in Las Vegas by a hundy.
Sure.
In Vegas, $100 will open lots of doors for you. Yeah, true enough. Okay. All right. Well, anything else on this one? It's a good issue. Love to hear some listeners' takes on this thing because. It's the world we live in. The New Yorker article is great to sort of it's a long article, but it kind of shows it. And I think it applies more in these big cities. But Vegas, when it comes to reservations and high traffic restaurants, we're becoming like Los Angeles and New York City in terms of having demand restaurants in the post-COVID age, which everybody has to go to.
Okay, so John, it's, 6 o'clock, Thursday night. How do you get into Guy Savoy?
Well, I just walk in. Wow.
Okay, let me rephrase that. How does someone else get into Guy Savoy?
Probably the best way on Guy Savoy, it says fully booked open table. I'd go there early. I think you guys talked about that. Be there when they open. I mean, when the doors swing open, walk in. And kind of say it with grace and friendliness and complimentary. We've always wanted to be here. I couldn't get through on the website.
I know John Curtis. John Curtis sent me here.
I heard about you on Eat, Talk, Repeat.
And
do that and just see if they can fit you in. That's probably the best way. Get there early. Don't show up on a Thursday night or Friday night at 7:30 and go, can you fit me in? When the doors open, be there.
Yeah, and I give you shit for doing the homie don't play the reservation game. But you've paid your dues in this town to get where you are.
Yeah, it
wasn't free.
I wasn't born in 2022, okay? I mean, I've been doing this since 1995 in the old days when you literally called up and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, I love being me in this town now. I don't know, to have to fight, swim against that tide, I'm not sure I would even want to do it anymore. You know, I'd probably just end up cooking at home all the time.
But here's a nice thing, too, and you alluded to this earlier, that there are alternatives to some of the hotspots.
No shit. I mean, I think that could be a whole
okay.
That could be a whole show. Like, if you can't get into X, you know.
Go to Y.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, here are your alternative, diversion points.
Okay, Carbone, I love it in that article.
Go to Piero's.
It talks about it's big with the.
I wish you guys could have seen the look.
That was good.
Bootleggers.
But you know, Carbone's big with the Hermes and Rolex set, right? But in this town, let's right off the top of our heads, the three of us, I think we can list 10 restaurants which the food is as good. And the experience is as good. You can't brag about having gone to Carbone, but it's a great restaurant. I mean, think about it. Bala, Ferraro's, RPM, Amalfi by Bobby Flay. Help me out here. There's a lot of them in town. Esther's Kitchen down here. Al Solito Posto. I mean, you can just Basilico.
Yep.
I mean, they are all over town.
Chicago Joe's.
I almost got
you got him. No, you guys.
I'll chalk that up as a win. Okay. We should do an entire show on that.
This,
but
exactly.
Okay, let's keep moving because that was a fun news article. But okay. We also have, and this kind of plays into if you can't go here, where. Else to go is Unstripped Las Vegas. Chef lineup was just released.
And it's powerful.
It really is. And so it's a food event. You pay an entry ticket and you get to suddenly taste all of the beautiful culinary magic of some of the best chefs we have in the Valley. And who wants to rattle off some of the chefs you get for your $150? Plus fees at VegasUnstripped.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth it. I mean, and you know, one of the key things that Eric Gladstone, the promoter of this, does, he tells all these chefs, it's part of the their entry fee. They cannot simply they don't pay anything to be there, but they have to cook something that they don't normally feature on their restaurant.
It has to be off menu.
All everything's original. So you've got Sean O'Hara at Esther's Kitchen. You have Christopher Fay at HUKL Culinary, Roy Elamar at Fine Company, John Arena at Metro Pizza, you know, the godfather of pizza in Las Vegas, Yuri Sarzawski at Partage. I mean, it goes on and on. Dustin Lewandowski at 1228 Main, Oscar Amador at Edo,
Francesco DiCaudo at Basilico,
Bruce Kalman at Soul Belly Barbecue,
Giovanni Morrow of Monzu and Old School Pizza,
DJ Flores at Milpa, your favorite, Gina Marinelli at La Strega. I mean, this is a heavy hitter lineup.
And normally it's here in the Arts District, just like a road. On the road of California, I think they block off, but this year it's taking place at the Palms Casino pool deck.
I know that
on May 18th.
They think it's going to be so big. They were so emboldened by how many people showed up last year that now they're taking that whole pool deck, and it's going to be a real foodie festival here. So I can't wait.
It's because you gave a speech, right?
Yeah, I do the sabering. I saber the champagne badly, but I get it done. Okay,
I'm not gonna go there.
Sort of like having sex with my wife.
I tried to not go there. It's Unstripped Las Vegas, VegasUnstripped.com, May 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Palms Casino, and tickets are $150.
And we love their place.
And it sells out, so get them now.
Okay, let's talk about some listener questions again. With the great listener questions.
I know, again.
We have so many.
Cheers at eTalk Repeat. If you have a question, comment, concern, or hate mail, that one goes to Sam at. Okay. Cranky Cold War Vet on.
A regular. One of my regs. Yes. I love regs. John should do a quick mention of good wine under $30 or something like that.
Like a wine bottle?
Well, I'll tell you, a wine bottles for under $30.
That's hard to come by.
In restaurants, oh, these days, it's real hard to come by. I mean, I would look go to Marche Bacchus, which has probably the lowest markup of any wine-centric restaurant.
Or Lamai.
Lamai as well, or Lamoon.
Yep.
And
Lamai
or Lamoon, they have extremely low markups. And if you're going to get a bargain bottle, which is really good, I'd go to those kind of restaurants. The Strip, just forget about it. You can't, you know, it's hard to find a good $75 bottle of wine on the Strip anymore.
Speaking of wine, wine bars are becoming a thing. Wino opened up at Durango. But did you know Partage's little, like, wine club, wine cellar by Partage on Sahara closed? But it's...
They closed, but they're gonna reopen. They're knocking out a wall to reopen.
Yeah,
on the
so
other
they're
side.
Relocating their wine cellar by Partage in that Spring Mountain Road location next to where Partage is.
Yeah, exactly.
And a new wine bar is going in where they were.
And they're going to serve more classic French cuisine and not sort of the elevated kind of more modern stuff that Partage is doing. So yeah, and we love Mark Partage. Mike Lyons of Oracle of Oakville, absolutely love the podcast. Love how Ash can go toe to toe with the grumpy gastronome.
Thank you.
All right,
it's exhausting.
Yeah. She goes toe to toe with me, but eventually I'm like Marvin Hagler versus Tommy Hearns.
No, I walk out of here feeling like what is it, Muhammad Ali just standing over you after that famous punch?
Okay, he's very.
Look at that.
God, I don't know why people say she's so dumb. Okay. tonight is my must-do trip. You think, curious of your thoughts. You're positive, but you don't talk much about Gordon Ramsay steak, specifically for the American ribeye rib cap.
Wagyu rib cap.
Wagyu. American Wagyu rib cap. I love Gordon Ramsay steak. I mean, it's his best restaurant.
Is it in MGM?
No,
Where is it?
It's in Paris. It's in the Paris Hotel. But, you know, I've been there like two or three times. I like it, don't love it. I mean, it's one of those places, when they opened, they were great. Now they've been open for like 10 years. It's the exact same menu they had 10 years ago. They do a great beef Wellington. I mean, I just can't get excited about it. I mean, I can't get excited about it because it doesn't do innovative food like Cut. It doesn't do Spanish-inflected food like Bizarre Meat. You know, it doesn't have the old school vibey thing that Golden Steer has. Mm-hmm. So it's just a good solid steakhouse, but I'm not going to, I can't sing hosannas to it, but I'm not going to not recommend it. Okay. So,
but what if you were visiting Vegas? What would be a must do for you?
Ooh.
Let's say I was me, but not me, but I was coming into town.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Here's the restaurants I would go to. Bizarre Meat would be definitely one.
Yep.
Raku would definitely be another one. Mm. Bizarre Meat, Raku, probably Mott 32 for the Chinese food, which are the elevated Chinese food there. Esther's Kitchen would be a must.
EDO?
EDO. EDO, and then probably like Kabuto or Yui Sushi, one of the great sushi parlors. You know, that would be like my have to go here because I know it's so good, you know. So.
I would drag people to Aroma.
Aroma, Latino?
Latin American.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a haul off the Strip, but yeah, great place. Oh. Yeah. You went the other night. We couldn't go.
We couldn't go together, and then Mr. Hollywood and I went last night again, and I'm telling you, the food he's putting out is unbelievable. And the restaurant's now packed.
Oh, yeah.
We first started going, it would be like maybe one to two tables were full when we would show up, and now one, maybe two tables available. And I've seen people walk in, and then like it's full, and so then they have to walk out now.
Wow!
So
that's great.
And he
that's
deserves great. It. So I'm really hopeful that he wins the James Beard Award. I think he's.
But pretty soon he'll be selling reservations.
to get in.
Okay, so from Jed, thank you, Jed. Is it possible to have a truly delicious buffet to rival an illustrious French restaurant? There's a big article I read recently about one of the most famous restaurants in France, in southern France, is this giant buffet featuring all the great, with giant seafood towers and everything, of all the great cuisines of France, and it's one of the hardest reservations to get in France. Is it possible to truly? No, it's not, Jed. I'm sorry. I mean, steam table food is never going to compete with a la minute
food. Made to order.
Yeah, made to order food. Yep. It's never going to. And French food, like Chinese food, like Japanese food, the best of it is in Italian food. It is made and presented to you, and you eat it literally within a minute or two or three of it hitting the table. And you can never duplicate that precision and the flavors and taste that come from it by putting out food and volume to people. You just can't. I mean, I know people want me to say otherwise, but it's just not possible. Okay, and then from Ben, Ramon Ebisu.
Ramon Ebisu is his recommendation to us in the Green Valley Henderson Restaurant Desert.
And that's Ben C. Thank you for the tip. I will have to get there. And then someone recommended the movie Boiling Point, and I thought I had seen every goddamn food movie made in the last 50 years, but I do not. I have not seen Boiling Point. Yeah, so I have to see that.
And then Warren said, tell John you can get to Zenshin at South Point without even seeing Michaels. and then, this is actually funny. He said they were going to Bavette's before a VGK game, was worried about John's judgment because they were wearing VGK jerseys.
And that's okay.
I was going to say Bavette's has actually become a secret VGK pregame, postgame hangout.
Yeah,
I think during playoffs, they even open early on home games.
They do.
Yeah, so like at four o'clock.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your insider tip.
I'd like to point out a number of listeners have reached out how good Bavette's is, particularly the burgers. So that is encouraging. And then Melissa writes that she's a brand new listener and loves our podcast.
Yay, Melissa.
And she trusts our opinions, which, with
I don't
Melissa,
know why.
With time, your taste will improve.
Which are worth what you pay for.
But hey, she's got a gentleman friend coming into town this Sunday, and he asked me to make a reservation.
Summerlin Area Steakhouse that we could recommend.
Well, there's Harlow.
So I responded to her email, and I said Harlow.
Or Nico's.
Is the Summerlin Steakhouse. Well, Nico's technically southwest. It's kind of...
Okay, yeah.
It is. I looked at the map because I was going to, and I said Harlow, great food, wine list, and ambiance, strip quality and pricing. Other recommendations that were not... necessarily steakhouses, Anima, Ilia, Greek Taverna, Basilico, and then Red Rock's whole host of restaurants.
Yeah, Osteria Fiorella does a great steak. Marche Bacchus does a great steak. So and Naxos Taverna, also in Red Rock. So if you're not limited to Italian, there's a lot of good places. And of course, there is a Romi Italian up in Summerlin, which I like a lot.
Let's take a break and then go to our recent ventures. I know we're a little long, but...
there's been a lot to cover.
I know. We got some
things. Be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, it's Ash, your favorite host of the show. I just know it. Look, besides exploring the Las Vegas food scene, my life's passion is being an injury attorney. So if you or a loved one needs dedicated and passionate legal representation, call Sam and Ash Injury Law. I promise our team will fight for your recovery even more than Sam does to get a word in during this podcast. Again, if you or a loved one needs an injury attorney, or simply has legal questions, call 702-820-1234 or visit samandashlaw.com. That's 702-820-1234 or samandashlaw.com. Sam and Ash, because you deserve what's right. Now back to the food, because let's face it, that's what we're all really here for.
You can see Ashley is moving and grooving to the music. We are back.
And for those of you who have never met us before, your luck has run out.
Oh, man. I've got to start this whole segment on recent ventures. Okay, I really haven't done much. I've been trying to, lay low. I've gone to Aroma twice with Mr. Hollywood.
Yes.
It is fabulous. We're trying to get in there before I knock on wood, predict his victory at James Beard, and it gets out of control. He's just making incredible food. And, John, I'm disappointed that you haven't gone back.
I know. It's, give me convenience or give me death.
I know. I will drive you there.
Okay.
And then where else? Oh, today I got the car drove up to Craig Road off the 95.
I'm sorry.
I know.
Oh, good to tell. What the fuck were you doing up there?
So I'm a millennial. I'm on social media, and I've been seeing these reels and posts from Carolina's Mexican Kitchen.
Oh, yes. I was going to go up there myself a few months ago.
But someone beat you to it. What stopped you from going?
Give me convenience or give me death.
Yeah. So today I was hungry. I wanted to get content for the show and really needed it. So Mr. Hollywood and I ventured up there, ordered basically everything off the menu. And it's incredibly great Mexican food, very classic, almost like gringo plus. Like, it's very, like, crunchy. They have this... One of the items we ordered was my mom's tacos. And it's seasoned ground beef, shredded, like, cabbage, queso fresco. Really incredible, flavorful, crunchy, fresh tacos, like, shells. And I just, you know, not a lot of salsa, not a lot of, like... But there's still a lot of dimension from it. And so it was really incredible. We did queso birria tacos. Not as authentic, again, like if you want real, like gritty queso birria tacos, you're going to Los Arcos or something similar.
Compa.
Yeah. But this is like, if you need an entry level birria taco, I say either go to Letty's or
or
Carolina's.
All right.
And so one of the other reasons that we ventured up there is they've been getting these like weird one-star Yelp reviews. And this is kind of maybe like a prelude to my pet peeve, where people walk in, the place is packed. They maybe have 20 seats total, small, entry level, first brick and mortar restaurant. Someone walks in, they can't get seated. The host tells them, I'm sorry, it might be 40 minutes until we can get you a table. And they throw a menu down. And then they go write a one-star Yelp review without ever tasting the food and complaining that their restaurant's too small. What the literal F-U-C-K.
Okay.
And so I wanted to kind of, one, see what it's all about, and two, support them. And I recommend it if you're up there and it's convenient to you, absolutely. If you want really fresh Mexican food, I recommend the venture, and don't be a Yelp terrorist.
Oh, yeah, well, Yelpers.
And also, be smart. It's clearly got a crowd, so go at an off time. I went at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was easy.
Yeah. Again,
This is like what we talked about. If you need if somewhere is a hot spot, you might have to go off hours.
Yeah, I went there Saturday, Friday night at 7 o'clock, and I couldn't get a table. Yeah. They're jerks. Whoa, you know.
Try Monday at 5.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, okay, Carolina's. Good rec. I'm glad you got there before me. Sam, where have you been? Oh, I'm sorry, Prague.
Oh,
where should we all go to eat in Prague?
I ate at some fabulous places in Prague. I don't know if I'm gonna bore you with that, but suffice it to say that Prague has come a long way since communism. Had some great meals, Michelin star place. But I tell you, my best meal was at a small bistro. That has the thing is there's a lot of Italians that have moved to the Czech Republic to Prague, and so the Italian food scene is unbelievable. And I had a risotto that was just the best risotto I have had in years.
Wipe the floor with
it
other
was
risottos.
Unbelievable. Oh. It had fresh, I mean, like never frozen shrimp in it. You know
what?
That are just. Beautiful.
How do they get those to Prague?
Which I'm is concerned.
You know what?
I'm concerned.
There's a river.
They
make it up from Hamburg.
They come up. They come up.
They're hardy
up the
little
Danube.
Fuckers.
No, like they make. Yeah, it was like a tomato. I was just absolutely divine.
So this is a good tip. So the Italian food in Prague is really good.
Amazing Italian food in Prague, and
you know where you can't find good Italian food. Paris.
Is that right?
Yeah, London is pretty good. London has a lot of great Italian restaurants, but boy, Paris, they're terrible. I mean, I think Italians look at French people and go, they run away. Why am I going to bother with these people? Yeah, they just see food from different angles. They just do. But well, I it's great that it's good in the Czech
Republic. And I think a lot of like young Italians are looking to kind of change scenery, and they go up there and set up shop, and then of course, you know, they bring their food. The more the merrier. I say welcome them all in.
That's great. Okay, so Prague. I was in D.C. I could recommend places. I did go. I said this before. A year ago, I went to this place called the Purple Patch in D.C., which Tom Sietsema, my buddy, head critic at Washington Post, he gave it the Restaurant of the Year, the Washington Post Restaurant of the Year, which is a pretty fucking great award. Patrice Cleary is this half a Filipino, half American chef, great gal. And she just takes Filipino food to a different level. It's the least respected of the Asian cuisines. I mean, I know Japanese people and Chinese friends and Koreans who just literally just turn away
hierarchy.
In disgust when you talk about Filipinos.
Yeah.
It's like they're the bottom rung culturally from a lot of Asian cultures. But when it's done right with the lechon, you know, the roast pig, and they do beautiful fish. And they just have a way with kind of these sweet sour mm-hmm. things. It's beautiful food, but unfortunately, you got to go 2,000 miles of the Purple Patch in Washington D.C. to get it, and you're not going to find it anywhere in Las Vegas.
Wow! Anything else from your trip?
I drank. My son and I bought him a bottle of 1975 Barolo.
Wow!
He was born in 1975. I always say he was the only good thing to come out of the 70s. I mean, have you ever seen the fashion of the 1970s?
And the delightful.
It was a kidney stone of a decade.
How was the wine?
The wine was interesting. I mean, he's my son Anthony is quite the enophile at this point. So he decanted it and was very careful with it. Mr. Hollywood would really have enjoyed it.
Did you have to use a Durant to get it?
Yeah, he got the Durant, and he was singing Duran Duran songs. He was undoing it. It was remarkably winey, it's kind of that dried red fruit stuff that the Barolos throw off. It was a little bit tannic, fruity, definitely wine, wasn't spoiled. The difference with these old wines is you open them up, you know, 49, 50-year-old wine, it doesn't last long.
You got to drink it quick.
Yeah, exactly. It's not one of these things you decant.
It's my kind of wine.
Exactly. You pour it and drink it, and you notice in the first 5 minutes, it's beautiful sometimes. Go, you know, let some sit in the glass for 10 or 15 more minutes, and a lot of the structure is faded and melted away. The tannins sort of, so it becomes kind of flabby and fruity, but not as tight and focused as it was when it comes out of the bottle. But as a historical artifact, it was really interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
And I love old Barolos. I just kind of a weakness of mine.
Okay, you tweeted something. Your hangover cure burger.
Yeah, you know,
Shake Shack.
I hate to constantly come back to burgers. I'm sorry, but
just accept it.
I just gotta go with Shake Shack over In-N-Out.
Off the show.
You know why?
Mute
why?
Mic.
Do you know why?
The potato bun.
The potato bun, the juiciness of the burger. I think it's better cheese, and wait for it, malted milkshakes. You can get there.
But that's nothing to do with the burger.
Fine. But I'm just saying.
Because I was going to say, they sell alcohol, too.
I am massively hungover, and going, I need a burger.
Oh, I'm going In-N-Out.
I'm going to go Shake Shack, and I'm going to go toe-to-toe with you, and I think Shake Shack brings it. I think it's.
They've got crinkle-cut fries, John. Than that.
The fries suck, but the burger is juicier and meatier, and it's more expensive, and I just think it's better. That's what I'm
also
saying.
You know, it's bullshit. If you ask them, I want a burger with ketchup, they'll go, yeah, the ketchup's over there. You can put it on yourself.
I'll tell you, I agree with you. This one thing other about the place is that it's the staff are really, really awful compared to In-N-Out.
Well, In-N-Out has great service.
The greatest service.
It's like the Mormons of the burger world. They're just so happy. Yeah. Or like Chick-fil-A workers.
Yeah. What
just
can
like,
we do for you?
Yeah.
We're all fresh scrubbed and ready to please. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I just think Shake Shack's soggy. Like, it's just like mush.
I think it's, again, it's like pizza and tacos.
If I go there.
It's a personal preference thing.
That's just a bad preference.
You think objectively.
Objectively?
I'm willing to concede to subjectivity here, and you're pulling the objective card. It's objectively.
It's objective. And it's more expensive. Wildly more expensive.
But because I think the ingredients are better.
No.
At Shake Shack.
No.
All right. Well, we will agree to disagree.
Like always. Toe-to-toe, baby.
Okay. So I think that's pretty much. Let's go to
Pet Peeves.
Pet Peeves. Sam.
I have one that has been forwarded by a friend, and that I agree with him on this. You finished your meal. Maybe you haven't finished all of it. If you're going to take some of it home, once upon a time, they used to pack it up for you. But now they just dump the containers in front of you and say, pack it up yourself.
Oh.
And I do not like that.
So
this is happening to me more and more lately.
Two things. I agree on the front of it's annoying when they just throw down the containers, but I prefer that they do it right there. I've had places where they take the food away and then they do it, and I get suspicious. I'm always like,
No, I want them to take it away.
Oh, I want them to do it right there and then just leave it.
Well, you don't have an anal compulsive wife like the food gal who prefers to have them give her the containers.
Really?
Because she wants to. Oh, she's an artist. You know, some people work in oils or clay. Alexandra works in
clamshell boxes.
Styrofoam repackaging food. She is. Watch her do it. She's an artist. She knows how to compartmentalize the food, make sure this goes with this. This will help steam this. This will keep this juicy. It's something to
see. I got
to
see this in
person. Yeah, yeah. She's really good at it. So that's
actually a pretty good one. Yeah, I like that one.
So what's your microaggression of the week?
Oh, mine's Yelp terrorists. If you're going to write a negative Yelp review, it needs to be verified by at least two visits.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe like do a 3-star and say, I'll go back and I'll revisit this. But especially if it's a mom and pop restaurant, local owners just starting, I will not walk in one time and complain. And I for sure won't do it if I've never had their food.
I'm going to tell you what else Yelp should do. They should mute people who only write 1 or 2-star reviews. If the person only writes 1 or 2-star reviews, then that person should be taken out of the mix.
Troll
tag. It's a troll.
Yeah, yeah. They should just get a little icon next to them that looks like a troll.
Or there should be a way to prove that you eat out.
Their handle could be under a bridge.
There should be a way to prove that you eat out more than once a year or once a month.
Look, my favorite was one time at my old job, there was an angry client who left a bad Yelp review. And I looked at his prior reviews. The USPS department, office at a local, the post office.
Yeah.
He was upset at the pace of service and the DMV.
Oh, really?
Do you think that anyone cares?
Who gives a F?
I was like, you just took time out of your day to complain about actually
something that everybody knows is crap to begin with.
And they don't care. I almost think they revel in it.
Oh, yeah. The post office is we'll get to you when we get to you.
So don't be a decent human. Support other people and their livelihoods. Yeah. And don't be a Yelp terrorist or troll. Yelp troll.
Well, I would apply the same standards to Yelp trolls that I applied to myself back when my heyday of reviewing restaurants for those 20 years. I wouldn't give a place a bad review unless I went more than once.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would also be really mindful of a mom and pop versus a Jose Andres or a Gordon Ramsay restaurant. If you want to slam Guy Fieri's restaurant for being this
100%.
Or that, or someplace in Caesar's Palace because they got bad service, go right at it. But when it's some obvious mom and pop that there's 4 employees in the whole place and they were harried or rushed or they weren't as friendly to you, I mean, give me a break.
Give them a break. Your grievance can't be get a bigger restaurant.
Serve me better. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So my pet peeve is this is more like a an Ash Watkins microaggression. What's with getting off of airplanes? I mean, am I the only person that has steam coming out of his ears watching all of these retards and brain dead people stand up when the plane leaves and they're standing there and the bins are above them and they could just reach up and get their bag, but they all just stand there sometimes for 15 minutes. And then it's like, it's my turn. I better get my bag.
I've got to give you another context clue. When they're giving you the safety spiel, they have to tell you to not inflate your life vest in the plane. So when you actually think that through, that they've had a situation where people had a pre... prematurely inflated all of their little life jackets, and they were all stuck.
They have to. They're telling people to take off their COVID masks before they put on their oxygen masks.
So, and you're asking too much. Yeah, right. Of humanity.
Yeah, when you're over in Nebraska, you really got to get that inflatable vest.
But I'm that way too. When I get to my place, I want to be there.
Get the front row of like the cabin, right? Always try to get the seats up that you can get as far forward.
Well, I've sat everywhere, but I
watch Rosa Parks Curtis over here.
Play that.
Watching these, I am, and I'll watch these people and go. Dude, I mean, it's not just one dude. It'll be like 15 people in a row. You've been standing there next to your bag for 10 minutes, and you can easily just take it out, and they go, oh, it's my turn now.
Watching people in the airport is actually humanity at its worst. You got to, John.
Right, it is a sociological
goal. This is really one of my pet peeves, but like, even I have just, you know, when I'm commercial air travel, I'm just like, ugh.
I really wish like I could smoke a doobie or pop a gummy right when you land and go, because the stress of watching these stupid people not be able to do something so simple is beyond me. So,
and there you have it, another E-Talk repeat in the books.
Yes, and you know I'm sure I've enjoyed yourself and
follow us on socials, like, subscribe, leave a review. All the fun stuff.
Email.
And don't cancel us.
What's the email?
Oh, cheers at E-Talk Repeat.
We love hearing from you.
Bon appetit.
Hey, it's Ash, your favorite amateur and unpaid food critic. Have we influenced you to try any of our recommendations? If so, we want to hear about it. Be sure to follow us on social media and tag us at Eat Talk Repeat. You can also email us at cheers@eattalkrepeat.com. Send us your hate mail, suggestions, questions, recommendations, and pet peeves. We want to hear about it. Don't forget, like, subscribe, and leave the show a review. Bon appetit.